When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick coming to you from after day two of the NFL draft. I want to do a brief recap. I'll be doing this all by myself, hopefully in a much shorter time than I otherwise would, a nice level voice so we don't have some of the microphone problems I've been plagued with from time to time recently. But an interesting day two, I think, for the Ravens. We talked about some of the problems of not getting an offensive tackle, even a developmental one, on day one. I think that persisted into day two and ended up actually costing the Ravens in a significant way. There were three tackles on the board that I thought might have made a lot of sense developmentally for the Ravens at 62, the first being Patrick Paul, who was taken before the Ravens picked. That left Suamataia and Amagaji on the board. Amagaji would have been a stretch, honestly, at 62, but Suamataia was a guy that I thought might have been at the best intersection of need and value, would have taken advantage of the Ravens' ability to wait a year for Ronnie Stanley's replacement to develop. The Ravens went in a different direction. They chose at number 62, Roger Rosengarten of Washington, who played right tackle with the left-handed Penix at quarterback. So he was defending the blind side as a right side tackle. Interesting player. I think it was a reach at 62 for him. I would have had him probably as a fourth round guy, honestly. Consensus picks had him at number 83, and the Ravens drafted him at number 62. So a pretty significant overdraft. Now, I was advocating taking a player like Suamataia there, who would have been a significant overdraft in round one. The Ravens went with Wiggins instead. So I understood the need to overdraft at the position because it's a high barrier of entry position at offensive tackle. I thought you might get a little bit of discount for taking a developmental player. The Ravens didn't do that, of course. And let's talk a little bit about who Roger Rosengarten is. Outstanding lateral movement guy, and that really is his calling card. He mirrors as well as any of the tackles in this class, top to bottom. So that is a very positive. Now, he pairs that with two characteristics which aren't particularly good. Short-ish arms. They're not outside the limits of reasonable at 33 and a half inches, but they're a little bit short to play on the left side. Pairs that with an anchor, which is his biggest weakness, probably does not have a good defense against the bull rush. That comes from being 6'5", 308, very slender for an offensive lineman frame. I know we don't think of a 308-pound man as being particularly slender, but he is that for an offensive lineman. And it means that a lot of edge rushers who are often going to have more length than him at the NFL level are going to have less of a problem getting to his chest plate first, striking, making first contact, and having their pass rush plan work its way through, being able to get him off his pins and falling backwards. He is a guy who has surrendered ground for mirror. And I'll point to Ronnie Stanley as the most similar or one of the most similar players in the NFL in that regard, a guy who particularly in the last 3 years, but even in 2019, did a good job of giving up ground in the pocket and maintaining his mirror, keeping hands off Lamar Jackson. So hopefully if he moves to the left side, that's something he's able to continue to do and not get beaten to the outside by faster, bigger, longer NFL pass rushers than he faced in the Pac-12. So, you know, I'm not thrilled with the pick. 22 in June. I think developmentally, he's not a long-term project in terms of what he needs to learn about playing the position. There are certainly things he's gonna have to do better. Probably hand fighting being one of the big things at the NFL level to keep longer arms off him. He's gonna have to be better than the guy across from him. But on the other hand, he brings a lot of that elite mirroring skill right to the NFL with him from college. So he's hopefully a guy that that can pick up there. And I think if you're looking for an element of development that he needs to be a lot stronger and he needs to be a lot bigger. So if he's at 6'5", 308, carrying that weight well right now, I don't think it would affect his mirror too much to move up to about 325 pounds. And I think he probably can put on that weight. Don't know how quickly he can do it. He can certainly put on bad weight very quickly. I think he can put on the good weight. Maybe not by this season, but by next season in terms of where he could be. 4.92 in the 40, so that is fairly darn elite in terms of LT speed. He's a guy who can help you run out into level two, make a block on the backside. So that's something we always recall from Ronnie Stanley. Ronnie Stanley, of course, had very long arms to go with that. A guy who might be more similar in some ways is Rick Wagner, who played for the Ravens a number of years ago now in the early Harbaugh era. And eventually went to the Detroit Lions on a big contract and wasn't quite as good a player with the Lions as he had been with the Ravens, in my opinion. But he's a guy who Wagner really tried to block people 12 to 6 with shorter arms. I don't know if that's going to be something that Rosengarten can go to as a go-to move. But if he can, that would be very nice. One thing, if he's going to be at right tackle, that's a really nice characteristic. Why is that? Well, at right tackle, the quarterback can see exactly what you're doing in terms of your 12 to 6 block that you're making on your opponent. And he can recalibrate that clock in his head to know how much time he's got after your guy beats you all the way around the edge back at 6 o'clock. On the blind side, your quarterback does not know that. So that movement is made behind you around that perimeter of the pocket, so to speak, 12 to 6, like on a clock. Except you're going by 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. that way, as I'm reckoning it here. And your quarterback doesn't have the same realization of exactly what's going on that side. So sometimes a quarterback like Lamar, who's got seemingly eyes in the back of his head, will understand it. But he did very well, Lamar did, with bump pressure from Stanley, which certainly would qualify as a pressure on a lot of plays, but did not create a situation where Lamar took his eyes off the field or made it impossible for him to move off that bump within the pocket and still create an extended play. So, there are characteristics of it in terms of being able to give up some ground on the bull rush and still mirror, or being able to work well in terms of mirroring as a player moves from speed to power and continuing to interpose yourself between his opponent and Lamar, that I think he could be similar to Stanley on. We've also been very frustrated with Ronnie Stanley the last couple of years in terms of his inability to anchor, largely, which we think is a function of the ankle, of course, and looked better in about the last four games of the season. So it's going to be interesting for Washington. I don't know that he ends up on the left side in the end. I think he's definitely a consolation pick. In some ways, he's kind of a... not a poor man's Jordan Morgan, because I think he's got even better feet than Morgan, but he's maybe like a slightly lesser Jordan Morgan. Morgan is a guy who I think will move to guard and will be perfectly fine there. Rosengarten is a guy, his frame is such that I think it's left tackle or nothing for him. In fact, if there was going to be another position on the offensive line he'd play, I think it would be center. So and maybe right tackle, maybe he'll be able to stay there, show the 12 to 6 blocks, be somebody who it's visible what's happening on that right side the way Ricky Wagner was, and be a guy that can support a quarterback like Lamar, who knows what he's doing in terms of the pocket, the time in the pocket and whatnot. I'm not knocked over by the pick by any measure. you know, 83rd on consensus boards. The Ravens got him at 62. So, you know, it's an overdraft. That's simple. And the overdraft was driven by demand at that left tackle position. And now, to be perfectly fair, I would have liked the Ravens to draft Sua Mataia at the end of the first round, probably even more. Well, there's no doubt that Wiggins was the better player, but I probably would have gone Sua Mataia over Wiggins at the end of that first round, which would have been even more of a reach to get a player who had higher and more obvious left tackle ceiling traits, you know, in terms of the elite length and some of the other characteristics of frame and whatnot, along with the feet that are good. Rosengarten really gets there because of the exceptional lateral movement is the thing he brings to the table. So we'll see. A pick that I certainly hope works out. And we'll move on to the next one now. And one of the things we didn't see from the Ravens was the kind of focus on the offensive line that we'd expected. Now, they did overpick in round two, but in rounds one and three, they took a corner and then an edge, Adisa Isaac of Penn State. You know, he is a really good value pick in the third round. I had a second round grade, actually a 2-3 kind of grade on him, but a low second round grade probably. And he was on consensus mocks at number 66. The Ravens got him at number 93. So that's really good value. And you see a lot of other teams are already picking player number 125 or 150 on the consensus mocks at this point. And the Ravens are you know, moving up 27 slots in consensus value in round three. That's exceptional. I mean, this is the kind of value they got out of Matabike or Travis Jones. So I think if the Adisa Isaac pick works out, it's going to be a very good one. To talk about his traits and characteristics a little bit, he's 6'4", 247, 33 7/8 inch arms. So he's already a guy who will test Rosengarten in some of their drills and some of their preseason reps and whatnot as they go with that. He's 23 in October, so he's a little bit older. Outstanding testing for explosiveness and a solid 4.70, 4.40. And obviously we don't have everyone as Adafe Owe at 4.36 or 4.39 or whatever he was. But 4.74 is still quite good for an edge and perfectly good. He turns the shoulder of the tackle very effectively in the run game, I think. That's something you can see on tape showing up from time to time, but he really is not a guy who handles one-on-one blocks all that well. So he's not a guy you want to leave alone. He can get displaced by an offensive lineman, has a lot of trouble with pulls. That's not uncommon, by the way, with edges that they, you know, get squared up by a good puller and knocked off the ball. But he would have a problem with that. I think he'll be an average kind of a run defender, and the Ravens have other options there, and he'll be more likely used as a situational pass rusher. So if you want to look at this, Adisa Isaac is probably competition for Ajabo this year. We don't know where Ajabo is going to be in terms of ceiling, in terms of floor. I think we really are Alice in Wonderland territory right now to figure out exactly what's going to happen with Ajabo. So Adisa Isaac gives him another chance to improve in this coming year there. His pressure rate at Penn State was at 15.9% his senior year. And that's just total pressure events divided by pass rush snaps.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Activity ranked 31st of players with at least 100 pass rush snaps. And that's out of about 875 guys that had 100 pass rush snaps. He was number 31. So good productivity. You know, that's certainly exactly what you want in a guy you're drafting in the third round. has a lot of tackles for loss, decent number of sacks, including 7.5 as in his final year. So it's not a guy like Owe who had failed to actually finish at the college level. Isaac had a decent amount of finishes at the college level, so that's not really the issue. I think there is probably he has a disproportionate number of finishes for his total number of pressures. So if you think of pressures being a pyramid, where pass rush events being a pyramid where you have your pressures at the bottom and then you have your finishes, which either end in quarterback hits or sacks higher up, you want to have a relationship that makes sense, and you don't want to have a really narrow base of pressures with a high conversion rate to sacks and quarterback hits, because that often will mean you're getting helped into cleanup sacks, cleanup quarterback hits. So that's something I kind of look for. And Isaac, if he is towards that end of the spectrum, Matabike was there, by the way, last year, got really paid off for it. But you generally, that's not the first thing you want. You want first pressure guys like Adafi Owe is. As much criticism as he gets around here for not finishing, he starts a lot of pressures, and a lot of the 60 sacks from last season were him and Clowney getting that first pressure and having somebody else clean it up. So Adisa Isaac would be more of a cleanup player than he would be a first pressure guy. He has some Sam characteristics, I will say. 11.7% of his snaps were drops to coverage in his last year in college, with solid coverage results, although it's not a whole lot of targets, at 6.5 yards per target. I will say that it's not frequent that a pass rusher of his stature gets to drop a lot, and it usually will happen in a big program like this at Michigan or Penn State or one of the places that has a fairly complex way of getting home on the quarterback, uses blitzes from level 2, a lot of zone blitzes and whatnot. There is one of those are a couple, two of the few schools where you really get an opportunity to see what outside linebackers can do as cover guys. So he had a little bit of that, and that's something to be thought of. I did notice he had only one batted pass in college. That was all the way back in 2019, so he hasn't had one since. When I see that in an outside linebacker, my concern is that, particularly if he's on the Sam side opposite the tight end, is that he may not be recognizing screen passes as well as he should. So, if everything is not as it seems right, as is often the case on a screen pass, then that the really good pass rush and screen recognizers will immediately drop off and drop off their rush to deal with that. And often are the guys who disrupt that pass heading to the outside, often tip it down, force an incompletion otherwise. And for him only to have one batted pass in college, I think that would indicate a weakness there. That is probably a small sample size. You know, he may have only had 20 or 30 such screens run to his side, but with the number of screens they run in college, you know, they had to run a fair amount to the Sam side and against a defense like Penn State, which is, you know, traditionally very strong in the middle of the field. You're going to have a lot of teams, whether they're the smaller teams or the bigger teams, trying to get the ball to the perimeter and take advantage of whatever size matchup or whatever in-space matchup they think they can create. So it bothers me a little bit that he had only one batted pass. But again, not a lot to go on. And let's see him on the field. We'll obviously see him. I think a real good value pick for the Ravens, again, in that end of the third round to get what essentially is an end of the second round player. And I'm excited about that pick. It is a position with the Ravens' big three being cornerback, offensive line, and wide receiver that I was not, you know, sure that they would address in the first three rounds. I think this is the one edge that DaCosta will draft this year. I don't think there's, you know, it's possible he'll draft a small school edge, but one of the limiting factors they have is total number of roster spots. And they already have, if you look at it, they have Adafi Owe, they have Ajabo, they have Van Noy. Those guys are sure of spots. Then they have Tavis Robinson, who they drafted last year. I don't think they're ready to give up on. They have Malik Harrison, who they've signed and is a good snap eater on early downs. Now, they might be able to move him back to inside linebacker and use him there, but he's very important to their special teams unit, so he's not going anywhere, and he'll be a game day activation. And a guy like Adisa Isaac and possibly Ajabo as well are going to have to fight for game day activations against each other to a certain degree. So we'll see exactly how the roster plays out, whether there are games where they might activate six defensive, six edges, but I don't really see an easy way they can draft another. And if you want to talk about one more player, Malik Ham, who's a Sam prospect, so you've really got to think about how do you keep that guy around, is also there and in year two. So he's got cheap years remaining and would be a guy I think the Ravens want to think about keeping. So there would be a lot of pressure to bring in a lot of pressure if the Ravens brought in another edge to fit them all on the roster. So good call. Probably the only edge the Ravens will take. And I would think going into day three now, they're really back to the offensive line needs, particularly at 113 and 130, with some good players still on the board. I'll bring up my draft board here. And we've been talking about this on the stream, which I encourage you to join. It's been a lot of fun. And we've got a color coding system now for all sorts of things. But the greens are drafted in round one and the blues are drafted on day two somewhere. And the guys who are still available and I like soon are the oranges. And those include a couple offensive linemen, Mahogany and McCormick, the South Dakota State guy. I think a lot of people actually scared off by the fact he comes from an FCS school, you know, outside of the what we used to call Division II football, I guess. But anyway, it plays in a lesser conference. And you really notice that when you look at film of that guy. He's the biggest guy by far on the screen. And in fact, it's almost silly to the fact that, first of all, he lines up in the same place, left guard every time. And they still are circling the player play after play after play. I was like, are you kidding me? Do you think I can't identify who this gigantic number 60 is? So McCormick is a possibility for them. On the draft stream, we've been shocked at the drop of Troy Franklin of Oregon. So he's a guy I think goes early on day three here, probably might even be before 113 when the Ravens get a chance. But there's also two other wide receivers that I think probably would have been given a third round grade by me, and that's Tez Walker of North Carolina, who had the only big catch against Wiggins all year, and Javon Baker of Central Florida, who would also make a lot of sense, and a guy who a lot of positive characteristics I won't go into now, but he's the third receiver that it could be on the board. In terms of cornerback, there's still several guys out there who might make sense. I think the Ravens could certainly double dip at the position given age. So TJ Tampa is still available. Kyrie Jackson is still available. And a guy I really like, Kamal Haddon, is available, who is a guy who's a little bit less athleticism, probably a little bit more of a cover three predator, and is a guy who had a 7.0 quarterback rating against last year. So he really made it work, and he's playing in the SEC, folks, at Tennessee. Unknown talent. I haven't seen him on anybody else's lists, but he's a guy I'd love to take a chance on, whether it's in round five or maybe a little bit later, where you don't really know what to do with the pick a lot of times. Kamal Haddon is a guy. He also might be a guy they just bring in as a UDFA. But if you're sitting on two sevens and you don't want to try and lock up a player like Kamal Haddon for 4 years, I think that would be a mistake to try and get him as a UDFA. And even if you talk to a guy ahead of time and whatnot, it's just too much of a chance. Somebody else will take him at the end of their board as well. Several safeties are still on the board. One guy that I'm happy to see went, and that's Cameron Kinchins, with one of the last picks of the third round. Went, and he's the 13.9 yards per target guy who also has a bunch of interceptions. And I think that most of what's being projected from him is based on that interception total and not on the yards per target total. All I'll say is ignore the metrics at your own peril. I think it is a great opportunity for evaluator arrogance. I'm not saying I'm never guilty of it either, by the way, but it's something that you really run the risk of if the guy's coverage metrics do not match his athleticism, his traits, and some of the things you can see right on the field just from watching a little bit of tape, you got a real problem. Nobody is going to put together a tape for you of all the bad plays some player made. There's lots of guys who put together highlight tapes. And there's lots of guys who, you know, throw together all the interceptions or even do a cut up of one game. But what there isn't any of is put together all the drops this receiver had so I can figure out what was the common thread in them. Or in Kinchin's case, figure out why game after game after game, he gave up so many big plays at Miami. It's a project, you know, a 3 to 4 hour project probably to go through, find those plays and look at what really went wrong. So I admittedly have not done that, but at 13.9 yards per target, he was off outside of my top 10 at safety. So a couple guys left at safety are Hicks, Taylor Demonson, and Keaton Oladapo, who's a guy a lot of people like. I could see him being drafted probably in the fifth round would be my guess. Hicks would be, in my mind, a fourth round guy, as well as Taylor Demerson. So we'll see how that plays out tomorrow on day three, or I guess today as you're listening to us on day three. Last plug I'll do is please come and take a listen to the draft stream. There'll be links on it all over. Look on my timeline in particular, and I'll have promoted a couple of times coming into day three here. And please join us when you can. The Ravens have 6 picks on day three, including 2 early in the fourth round. So it's going to be a busy day, and it's going to be a very fun day. And if you've never been at one of the draft watch parties that we have, it's 6 people, highly analytic folks, giving their opinions about individual players, and got a great group of analysts that are regularly on the show, a couple new guys as well, and should be a lot of fun, and I hope you'll join us. Lots of audience interaction as well too in the stream, so we had a lot of fun with that today. Okay, folks, well, that'll do it for today, and I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.